we are a sustainability platform for banks and payment providers. And the end goal of us is we want to empower any consumer in anywhere in the world when they make a transaction or have an interaction around a transaction, use that as a force for good. So we've built a plug-in platform that any financial service institution, any bank, any payment provider, any retailer, any football club, anyone in the world can plug us in and start to empower their end consumers to understand their impact and then make some good choices, like choose better. And then if you are going to go and buy something, you can choose to compensate whilst you're doing it or use that as an opportunity to fund lion conservation in Africa or prevent plastic from entering the ocean in Bali, whatever that might be. So use the interaction as a trigger for something good, because that's what we're all about. We're trying to use those 2 trillion payment interactions around the digital experience around the world. What an opportunity to just try and use as a force for good, do something good when you're doing this thing for you, whatever it might be. And that's what we're here to do. So we're here to empower those transactions through everyone else who already has the customers.
Welcome back to Purpose Driven FinTech. I am your host, Moni Millares. In today's episode, we speak with Ollie Cook, CEO and co-founder of Echo, the multi-award winning sustainability platform for banks and payments. Echo's solution allows you to make any transaction or customer interaction an opportunity to do good for the planet and your business. We discuss how we should understand sustainability first and then think of how fintech can be part of the solution, not the other way around. We talk about how Echo is a positivity-driven fintech, and I love that idea. We talk what is sustainability and impact, sustainability lessons from Europe to be aware of in Asia, the amazing Planet Saver account, and so much, much more. If you enjoyed this pod, please subscribe in YouTube, follow on Spotify, and leave a 5-star rating. Remember to connect on LinkedIn to keep the conversation going. Ollie, it is an absolute pleasure having you in the show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
Likewise. So before we get started, just for full disclosure, Ollie and I used to work together maybe, I don't know, 9 years ago, a long time ago in tandem, many years ago. But one of the things that I remember about him, like when we first met, I was like, oh yeah, Ollie is the guy who spent some time in Africa before coming back to work. I should do that one day. So that's my memory of Ollie. We were both in the product team starting one of the first challenger banks in the UK back then. And now, see, like...
Now the fintech seems huge.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Ellie sure. Now runs Echo, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So before we go into it properly, sustainability is a very relevant topic. It's been a very relevant topic, but now it's becoming a critical topic.
Yeah.
Hence, this conversation is super, super relevant. So I want to start with, how can we build more purpose-driven fintechs?
Yeah, great question. Sustainability is, my general view is it's now you must be in the space and you must be doing something, otherwise you will lose as a business in the future. How can we build more? I think it probably, for me, it comes down to how we started Echo in the first place, which was talking about sustainability, not about fintech. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about the broader problem. And then it rolls into fintech could be doing an incredible opportunity here, because there's a space to connect fintech and financial services to consumers. No one's really helping that happen. Oh, maybe we can build Echo and do that and be that facilitator in the market. So that's why we built Echo. But generally, more across the board, talking about the problems and openly discussing an industry, the problems, and maybe fintech's the right answer. Maybe it's not the right answer. Maybe it's something entirely different. But just think about the problem, and then if there's a fintech solution to it, which there often is, we should start building those businesses to help solve the bigger problem than a fintech that's purposed on XYZ.
So then tell us more about Echo. What's your purpose and what did you do?
Yeah, so what do we do? We are a sustainability platform for banks and payment providers. And the end goal of us is we want to empower any consumer in anywhere in the world when they make a transaction or have an interaction around a transaction, use that as a force for good. So we've built a plug-in platform that any financial service institution, any bank, any payment provider, any retailer, any football club, anyone in the world can plug us in and start to empower their end consumers to understand their impact and then make some good choices, choose better. And then if you are going to go and buy something, you can choose to compensate whilst you're doing it or use that as an opportunity to fund lion conservation in Africa or prevent plastic from entering the ocean in Bali, whatever that might be. To use the interaction as a trigger for something good to happen. Because that's what we're all about. We're trying to use those 2 trillion payment interactions around a digital experience around the world. What an opportunity to just try and use as a force for good, do something good when you're doing this thing for you, whatever it might be. And that's what we're here to do. So we're here to empower those transactions through everyone else who already has the customers.
I like that. But I want to get deeper in your brain because as nascent as, well, quote unquote nascent, as sustainability is, there's many players in the fintech industry doing similar to what you do. So what was your hypothesis? What made you think, hey, it's my hypothesis behind Echo that makes us think that we can do something different than the other guys doing the same thing?
Yeah, and there's more, and I have 2 views in it. One is the more the better, because the problem we're solving isn't how to make Echo massive. Well, that's one of our challenges. It's the, we're here to do the thing, sustainability for the world. And actually, the more people doing this, the better the game is, the better everyone is. That's good to the world. Specifically about us, though, we think about it in a few different ways. One is we need to start empowering people with information. So there's quite a few people doing information in terms of carbon footprints. That's going to be table stakes for everyone doing a transaction everywhere in the world, I think, over the next kind of few years. That's just everyone. Then we more generally do the so what. So how do we carbon compensate? How can we use a transaction to fund lion conservation that you care about because you have a personal passion about lions or elephant, whatever it might be? Or prevent plastic from entering the ocean because you, as an end consumer or as a business, really care about that issue because it's relevant to you. So some sports clubs, for example, really care about plastic, really prevalent in their industry. And how can we help them encourage that kind of behavior to prevent plastic from entering the ocean through transactions that happen in a football club, whatever it might be? For us, it's about how can we combine those 2 things together. So not just the so what and not just the knowledge, but combine those 2 things together to make it really tangible consumer. The other part of it that we think about is positivity around sustainability. You've got to feel good about doing good. The way to do more of the same habit is feel good about it. And it's the same way we think about it or gym or when I go running on my Strava. It encouraged me to say, well done, Ollie. You beat your PB in this tiny little segment of a little bit of a race. Feel good about that.
It works.
It works.
Really well. Yeah.
It really does. But what it didn't do is I didn't go running for the last 5 days because of I could have been there. I didn't get an alert saying, Ollie, get off your ass. Sorry, Shazam. Ollie, get off. Go and do some running because that's not the way to encourage me because I'll turn that app off and I'll say, no, I can make my own choices. So we think about positivity, like how can I make you feel good about doing good? Because then you'll do more. Then you'll tell more people. Then you'll engage with more. That's, I think, a really interesting space to get into, which we spend a lot of time thinking about. How can I make you feel good about the good thing you've just done?
I like that. It's the first time that I hear the concept of positivity applied in fintech. And the element of emotion embedded in the core of who you are as such.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
You are. You want to do stuff in this space, consumer, business, corporate, wherever it might be, because you actually care. It's like deep down, it's way bigger than I care about my job. It's way bigger than I care about it. Like society, I care. And that's a very human conversation, a very human level. Mm-hmm. And how would you use fintech to create that human connection? I think really interesting.
Yeah. So if we step back, what's your definition of sustainability?
Sustainability. There's a whole variety of ways to look at it. I think for me, it's about being conscious of what you're doing and making sure you're making the right choices. So I've seen a quote before, which is sustainability is an outcome of conscious decisioning.
Okay.
So in the way that you know what you're doing, you're behaving in the right way. Because you can take it in lots of different ways about, talk about a carbon footprint, you talk about a biodiverse impact, about lots of different things. The way we think about sustainability is just empowering you to understand what you're doing and really engage in that and make that decision that is right for you. I think that's not perfect. Ideally, everyone's perfect, but reality, we're not all perfect. But just understand it and engage in it and make a conscious decision. That'd be the first step.
Awesome. And then if we come back to impact, and then basically we have sustainability on one side, and then at the same time, we have like big worldwide problem statements. On one side, we have 3/4 of adults are still underbanked or unbanked. And As of today, we produce about 6 billion plastic card payments per year. That is just insane. So how can you go deeper on how does eco have impact on customers' financial lives as such?
Yeah, it's crazy that plastic, isn't it? It's a shocking statistic when you think about it. So we get more into the every transaction, everything you do generally has an impact. Because that's just the way of the world, right? So let's say we're going out for coffee in coffee shop A, coffee shop B. The reality is you are going to go out for a coffee because you're out there, you're meeting someone for a coffee. That happens. What we want to do is help you choose between coffee shop A and coffee shop B. Coffee shop A is really on top of it, has a really good sustainability agenda, has really driven down all of their impact throughout their supply chain scope 1, 2, and 3. Coffee shop B, hasn't done any of it. What we'd really like to do is help encourage you so that when you come outside and you're in the high street and look at those two coffee shops, you go to coffee shop A. That's a minor change, right? The coffee is broadly the same, but we're moving over to one place because it's better for the world. And the more you do that, coffee shop B has to up their game as well because they're losing customers and business. They need to do that. So then you start to change behavior on a micro scale that really scales up and encourage businesses to do good because they're going to have to because humans have gone in the way. So we start thinking about all the transactions that happen around the world, that 2 trillion interactions. How can we make them better and make you understand and engage with just the decisioning, that sustainable point, like the decisioning around what am I buying? Where am I buying it? Then on top of that, we do the so what. So how can we use that as a trigger to fund the projects around the world? Our North Star is we want to flow $1 billion to our project. And we work bird conservation, we work with lion conservation, elephant conservation, plastic, ocean carbon credits, etc. We want to give our projects the best in the world, $1 billion, because that is how we're going to give those people a real opportunity who are experts in their fields to do good stuff. It's not me doing all this stuff. I just want to give the best people in the world the tools they need to do the good stuff. I'm just a
I love it. Like, one of my favorite places in the world is Laos. Yeah. And then the reason why Laos became so it's just like inside my heart is because I went to an elephant sanctuary. But if you go to many places in Thailand, they take you to an elephant sanctuary that is very touristy. This one, it's also touristy, but it's in the middle of the jungle and the elephants are free. And then I got to trek properly in between the elephants and we were like close and I fell in love with the elephants. And then after my trip, I was like, I want to adopt an elephant. Yeah, it's like, how much does it cost to adopt an elephant? I love what you're doing.
It's a really interesting thing. There's a whole behavioral psychology around victim bias. So because you understand it and you care about it, because you've seen elephants, you really feel it, you're more willing to engage in the conversation. So we think about carbon footprint. If I asked you to draw your 1 ton of carbon footprint, good luck. If I asked you to draw an elephant, you've drawn a pretty good elephant. But then, so I care about the things I understand. So we might engage with you as a consumer because we're talking about the elephant you care about. It gives me the right to talk to you about carbon footprint. Because you're already engaging the topic, I can start moving it over to another conversation. But I've earned the right to engage you to have a better conversation around broader topics. It's quite an interesting kind of thing when we talk about sustainability. It's a broad thing. There's biodiverse impact, there's carbon footprint, there's lots and lots of ways. But how can I engage with you and find the right thing that's right for Monica that makes you passionate about it? And then, because if you see that and you care about the elephants and then you see the next thing, you'll really care about that as well, because you care about elephants, you've got that human connection and we're on. And try and move that conversation over and get that people in that right space is, it's a challenge, but it's certainly one that we're going for.
Yeah, I think I got ahead of myself talking about the elephants. Whenever people talk about elephants, I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
But then.
Come work the project with us in Tusk.
Yeah, I would love to. But now, coming back to today. So actually, this is a very relevant question for you and I. When you and I started working in fintech, 2013-14, it was just the beginning of fintech, right?
Yeah.
And there was this narrative that it's like, hey, banking is broken and we're here to basically have good impact people's lives. This is the other financial stress. However, fintech has evolved rapidly in the past 10 years, a ton. Like, the industry is so different right now. It's so different. However, I have this hypothesis that as much as we have had impact, because we have had, the amount of impact that we've had compared to the size of the problem statement is not big enough. So if we use the next 10 years and have the same amount of impact that we've had in these past 10 years, we're doomed. So I believe we should accelerate our thinking and start thinking about how we can have 5 times or 10 times more impact in the next 5 years' time, not in the distant future. What's your take? How can we do that?
I agree with you. I agree with you, like, the actual impact. I think that we're evolving, though, from when we were at Tandem, was very much us versus them, right? Fintechs versus banks. That was it. And you fight, and do the banks think we can actually change the world or not? Generally, they didn't think we could do anything. We were just a little website somewhere and it'd be done. That has changed and evolved. And I think now, fintechs are enabling banks to do what banks should do, but can't do for all the reasons. I've worked in banks for a long time. They can't do it for lots of reasons that is very sensible and pragmatic reasons why they can't do some of the things they want to do. Now, we as a fintech industry can partner with those people who already have hundreds of millions of consumers and start to empower them to do good things, whether it's about financial well-being or sustainability or about inclusivity, whatever it might be. We can be here to work with bank financial services who are already big. And I feel like there's a dynamic change that's happened, which is very open to that being conversation and inclusion. I mean, you'll have seen all the big financial institutions have their own accelerators, varying degrees of success, but at least they're talking about it and looking to embrace. And I think if we're going to change the speed at which we are making an impact, it needs to be with the people who already have all of the money and all of the customers and work together on problems. And they need to, big banks need to kind of embrace fintechs at an accelerated pace and kind of use us, test us. We're happy to jump in and test stuff on your customers in a small segment. That's fine. Customers will like that. And for us as a fintech industry to go the other way and go to the banks and go, let's do this. I don't need to do it on my own. You've got all these people. You've got all the customers. You've got all the opportunity. Can we help you solve this other problem over here and do it together? And I think that's where, if we're going to accelerate it, combining those two worlds together faster and testing things out faster, that we'll see real success.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing is, and we need to be open-minded on both sides.
Totally. No, open to failure, I think, is an interesting one. Fintech world, I don't think we're open enough to failure still. I think on LinkedIn, I think we are, because I like to tell everyone I am. In reality, I don't think anywhere near as we like to portray it. And big banks, again, right reasons, FCA regulated, et cetera, very averse to failure and trying things out that don't work. If we could change that, be open-minded and accepting and let's go, let's try. Let's not go and shoot people down for trying something that didn't work. That would be a big cultural shift. I think it'd be brilliant if we could get there. I don't know how to do that bit.
But it is so true. Like, I just came back from Dubai. I was in Dubai FinTech Summit.
Yeah.
And I loved it. But I think what I loved the most about it was the mindset of the prominent speakers running the country and the big unicorns, all the speakers. They were very risk equals opportunity. Their mindset was like another level outside. Yeah. Good, because then that gives this energy. Exactly. Oh, let's go for it. Let's try to see, because risk equals opportunity. It's not a risk equals failure.
Yeah. Yeah. So then the more we see that kind of behavior, the better. Because then you know those things all come together and actually mean the velocity gets up, and we 3 or 4x the velocity because we're trying stuff, we've been open-minded, we're taking more risks.
So if we were to do those changes, we're open-minded and we are open to failure/risk and we embrace opportunities. How do we know we've reached like change, significant change in 10 years' time? What are the things that we would measure that will tell us, guys, you did well?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. So if I'll talk about it from a sustainability point of view, because I think I have a pretty clear view on if we've done this well, people will know their impact of what they do and they will say they're engaging in it and they understand it and are doing something about it. if we could get to 90% of the population have financial services and are able to do this and engaging it and stand, that'd be it. Because the purpose isn't fintech. The purpose is much bigger than that. And fintech is an enabler to help you make better choices. That would be a great outcome to get to. And people around the world understand it and engage in it. And then you've got a whole different question about how do we actually make you act and make you behave and make you do all the great things. But once you're engaged, you're a long way down that journey.
Yeah, I like that. It's engagement, basically.
Yeah, just engage in it. Understand it, engage in it.
Yeah. Okay. So now, if I go back to you and Echo, can you slow down again and tell us what's the actual problem statement that you're solving for? Because exactly, sustainability is huge, carbon, it's such a big problem that I'm sure you're focusing on a subset of problems.
Yeah, the fundamental problem that is the kind of where people built Echo from, or even the hypothesis, is that businesses, banks, financial services, payments, businesses want to do good. The board want the business to do good. The shareholders want the business. The employees of that business want to do good. And then you got the other side coin saying customers all want to do good in this conversation. And the theory behind Echo is that got to be that kind of middle bit which connects those two worlds to mean they can, both sides of that can do exactly what they want, which is do good when you're doing transactions, when you're doing payments, or just more broadly in life. I want to work on things that are good to the world. I want to interact with brands that are good for the world. And the way our product comes in is that we connect those two things up, which means when you as a business are running your business and your customers are buying stuff or doing stuff or transacting or interacting, whatever it might be, our platform can use that moment as a force for both of you to do good. That's what we're here for, is that both you and your consumer can do good in that moment of that interaction between your two kind of things, consumers and brands.
So who are your customers then?
So we are a B2B2C business.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the C is the people who generally choose to act and do stuff and change the behavior. So we always think about the C. The B is our conduit to get to the C. So how do I get businesses to engage to allow their customers who want this and make it easy for them to deploy to their customers? So we work a lot on how do we make our clients, how do we make it easy for our businesses, our clients, to deploy our technology to their end consumer? Because consumer is the one we want to get to. We've got to go through the businesses to get there. We have two customer groups, for example. When it comes to the banks, payment companies, businesses, the B side of it, all the effort is on how do I make this effortless for you to do something, to deploy it in. And then we spend a lot of time thinking about how do I make sure your customers are super engaged in the activity? Because then you're solving the business problem. And the end consumer generally is anyone digitally interacts, normally it's digital, with any kind of purchase, so digital banking or lots of e-commerce purchasing, whatever it might be. Those people, and then the people there, that subset care about impact, which is the vast majority of us. Care about what we're doing. We don't really segment our final consumer by demographic significantly, because what we found is generational responsibilities are very different as well. Grandparents really care because they realize what it means for their grandkids. And then the middle generations care because we're in the middle of this whole thing. And then younger generations super care because their future life, that I'm literally building the life that I'm going to be living. Yeah. So we don't really split on that way. It's more the mindset and the personality of give people the choice to do a good thing. Generally, they'll do a good one.
I like that. But then this is where I love talking to people in different regions as such. I feel in Asia, the sustainability proposition, other than in Singapore, is still booming. It still hasn't even been born. It's the infancy stage. But in Europe, like, people are just demanding this product. So it's with that lens that I'm asking, because the audience has, I have people in both sides of the world, right? So what are the pain points that the B2B customers would have, or the pain points that consumers would have that then made them say, hey, we need this proposition?
Yeah. So I think you're right about the different kind of geographies over different paces. The bet we're making that over the next kind of 5-10 years, everyone will be in this space. Because I've got to believe that's where we're going to get to. Just hardly to believe. Yeah, that is, we'll get there. And everyone's at their own pace for various different reasons, but we'll get there. The fundamental pain point that businesses tend to have, banks, for example, so I've sat in a number of different boardrooms, is sustainability is often perceived as a few problems with it. One, it costs money to do it, which is a massive myth that needs busting, because it doesn't. It can actually make you money, direct and indirect. Good business is good business if you're doing good for the world. The other part, the myth, business point of view, is how do I know what's happening is actually happening? So if I fund land conservation, if I fund reforestation, if I fund plastic entering the ocean, but how do I know that's happening? Because big financial institutions have a real, rightly, fear about saying they're doing something and they're not actually doing it. That's a massive problem there. If you're sitting in the boardroom, you care about your corporate risk and your reputation. And being exposed to greenwashing is a real problem.
Yeah.
That's kind of one area we think a lot about. So how do we know that? So one, we can make client money, which is great. But more interestingly, we make sure that every activity you do with Echo is traced with a world-leading provider. So we can trace a plastic bottle that's saved in on the beaches in Bali, recycled and put around some fish in the shelves down the ocean. We can trace that impact. Fringed. Then from a consumer point of view, you've just got to look at the data that shows you across all segments of all kind of areas, people want to move to brands that are engaging, things that are relevant to them and that they care about. You can look at it in financial services, you can look at it in clothes, you can look at it in food. People care in different, again, different geographies, but where my food's come from. I really care where it's come from. I don't want it to be thrown all over the world or anything like that. I want it to be local produce because that's good for the world and good for my local community. So those two things come together that there's not a lack of want in the space. No one doesn't want to do good. No one we speak to ever says, I don't care about sustainability. I don't want to do this. They're not interested. Like, that's just not a thing. Consumers, but not a thing. The problem is actually just solving the barriers, which are, as a business, it costs me money. Nope. Takes too long. Nope. Can't trace my impact. Nope. None of that's relevant. We can do all of that stuff for you. And as a consumer, it's too hard to do it. Nope. We can do it in one click. Too hard to find the space. Okay, all your brands are doing it. So it's just knocking down the barriers is the problem, not how do I encourage you to do it?
Yeah. I was about to ask something, but you just gave me the answer, I think. But I'll ask it anyways. So thinking about the different geographies that I said that in Asia, I still don't see, at least Southeast Asia, I still don't see that boom like we see it in Europe. What is your hypothesis on what will it take to make that shift?
I definitely don't think it's one thing. Generally speaking, the more you get to see the results on your doorstep, people you care about, that tends to obviously hit home more. And not all geographies are actually going to see that on their doorstep for in the next 5 years. But I think there are different ways of tackling it. One is maybe it does need more government regulation in different geographies to force the conversation. I think Dubai is an example of that, who have raised that conversation and therefore are doing it. And generally, again, like lots of things, creating awareness through talking about it, bring COP to the area, get local politicians, local businesses to engage in the topic. I think that's another way that we can work. I don't think there is a silver bullet. I think there's a silver bullet. Someone would have pulled it by now. That's the wrong reference. But you know what
I mean? Yeah, but I think you answered this in your previous answer. That's why I was like, oh, you just answered the question, right? But now it's very nice that you paraphrased it. But I want to go back to something that you said earlier about myth busting, that sustainability is expensive. But then because you would say, hey, it's about awareness. Hey, it's about regulation. The other one, it's we know how this world works, right? It's about the right incentives. So Are there like certain commercials around this that you're like, hey guys, it makes sense to do it from a commercial perspective because of ABCD? And then You're like, oh, let me check it out.
Yeah. So I think that's a massive part of it, is to tackle the impression that people have, which is sustainability costs me money. That's a cost. I've got 3% to grow my revenue line, whatever it might be. We have different commercial models with our partners that change that. Generally, when you work with us, the business case pays for itself within 3 months because we have direct revenue opportunities, indirect revenue opportunities, all that. So it really works. Now, interestingly, what it's doing is solving the myth, most brands don't want the revenue, which is interesting. So
they
what you're doing is
pass it over to customers.
Give it back to customers, give it back to projects, give it back to impact. So it's really interesting. It's more of a solve the problem, which says, I don't want to have this kind of multi-million pound challenge. But now you've told me that I can do it and do it quickly and it can make revenue. That's great. I actually don't want to make revenue off this. I don't want to. I want to go and do more good with it or invest in the product or do all this amazing stuff with it. But we've solved the myth, which is the one that's better than your head, the going, yeah, no, because it just costs money. It doesn't drive growth, all that kind of stuff, which isn't true. So it's a really interesting one because you solve the problem and you realize that wasn't really the problem in the first place. The problem was a historic thing that says this really isn't going to change the world. And ironically, it is actually going to change the world.
That is a surprising moment that I was not expecting.
Yeah, it's very, not all brands. All brands have their options and different things, but yeah, quite a lot of brands don't want it.
That is cool. So again, coming back to what you said, that we need to reach customers on the emotional side, something that they care about, rather than talking them about like carbon, because we cannot visualize that. We do care about, not all of us, but many of us, we do care about nature and animals. Can you tell me about the Planet Saver account? You were in the news recently.
Yeah, Planet Saver. So this is we partnered with BLME in the UK and a cash management product called Oconee. And it's a savings product. And this is another example of monetary flows where you can use it to do something good effortlessly as an end consumer. So if you think about your consumer point of view, I want my money to do good. How can I do that? Partner with BLME and Oconee to launch the Planet Saver, where you can divert 1% of your interest into the planet positive project, carbon credits with Gold Standard or animal conservation with Tusk or plastic from entering the ocean, all these amazing things. So you put your money in the savings account, you get a really good rate of interest, and then some of that interest or equivalent of it will go to these projects. And then at the end of your kind of month or quarter or year, whatever your product savings you've taken, you get to see the impact your money's had and the positive impact. It's a really nice way of passively doing good and seeing the impact and seeing how money can force for good. Because interest is another interesting psychological question of, it was never you didn't have it. There's the whole thing around giving money is one thing, but diverting money that I never had anyway, if it was coming to me, is quite an interesting concept. And you still get a good rate of interest anyway. So what we're really trying there is understanding whether that passively works for consumers, for businesses, for corporates who can put money away, make return, and do good at the same time. That's certainly an interesting thing. So we launched that in the UK a couple of months ago, maybe.
Yeah. I am not going to say this because we're friends, but I've been following you, of course, for a long time. And I've seen that you won awards, this, the other. But I think of the many people that I've spoken before, your solution is really different. Like, it is, you are doing good that multiplies itself by doing more good. It's not only that you are enabling fintechs and big banks to build that awareness and being the enabler, but at the same time, it's like you said, there's examples of your customers who then say, yeah, I've made all this money. I don't want to keep it. I want to give it back to the community to give more. And then there's the customers, right? That it's like, hey, and you have this good account that, yeah, it's giving you interest, but at the same time, it's not all for me. Like, I want to give part. So by doing this business, you're having like, ooh, massive ripple effect. That's super cool, Ali.
Thank you, Monica. Firstly, that's really kind. Thank you so much. And you've touched on me. I don't even told people externally this. What you've landed on there is exactly why we call it Echo. Echoes out. So you make a transaction one moment and it echoes around the world. And that's why some of my branding, you'll see kind of the echoing of it. And it's really interesting you said that, because that's exactly what we wanted to hear, is one moment can echo around the world.
I'm sold. I'm your fan.
Yeah, you want the t-shirt soon. You
know? Yes, please. Yes, please. Not only as a friend, like as a genuine fintech person. And I think this is the right moment to ask and to say, you recently closed a round. Congrats. So
can you tell us
more about it? Like, super well deserved.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a hard market. Yeah, we closed an investment round. This is a really exciting time for us. So some brilliant investors joined the team, bought into the mission of what we're trying to do. Also understanding the scale of this kind of transactions around the world and the opportunity to flow the $1 billion to our projects, which is really exciting. Yeah, the investment for us is about now, how do we build more really skilled, create a bigger team with highly skilled people, individuals. We've got some incredible announcements coming up around people who are joining Echo Team, iconic names in the industry who understand what we're trying to do and can come in and go, yeah, we figure out how we can deploy this all the way around the world, which is amazing. And then building quicker routes to market with products, right? So it's always, as you'll know, when you work with banks and financial services, it's how can we just make that faster? Like, you can integrate us in 4 hours, but how can you do it in 1 hour? How can you do it quicker? How can you make test and learn much quicker? That's really it for us. Because again, we want to knock down that barrier of, it's hard to do this. Third on the product roadmap, the product roadmap has really deep and really hard.
I said no many times.
Very easy to say, oh, do you mind if I just put the top of the roadmap? No, I'm going there. If we can make it quicker for you to do it and all the benefit, okay, then we're not talking. This is a really exciting moment for Echo, for sure. It's how do we go for it? We are now really in that global scaling, which is super exciting.
Yeah, I'm genuinely very happy for you. And it's amazing to see that it's like you're making so much good. And then now people are supporting you to go and make.
Thank you very much.
So as we approach towards the end of the episode, people, our listeners, our fintechers want to get involved in the podcast as such. So now they are asking me to ask questions on their behalf. So I have a question from you for the question from the community. We have from Ara. He was in the podcast before. So it's Ara Abrahamjan. He's a board member and advisor at Ameriobank and Cognize. And he asks, what could be your ideal board member or advisor? And what do you want to receive and what not to receive from your board members?
Good question. So history of Echo is we are, you know, there are four of us who started to co-found the business. We've always been a team of people who listen and collaborate. And ever since day one, we've built a team of advisors around us. Mm-hmm. Always. Because we always listen. We're not here. There's no kind of meritocracy in terms of views or opinion. It's opinions that matter and bring advisors in. The best advisors we've had by a long shot are those people who proactively lean in. A load of people can put advisors on advisor to XYZ FinTech or XYZ startup. That's great. Me as a CEO, co-founder and the whole team, I've got a million and one things I'm trying to get through. Don't necessarily rely on me to come out to you and ask you for a specific advice. I will do that. But what's more helpful is actually the advisor leaning in, going, how can I help you with this? I've got this idea, or I've spoken to this person for you. This is an opportunity. Because that's where we need help to kind of multiply it is, be proactive and lean in. There are a few advisors in our team who have done that and have been absolutely exceptional, like game change for us in nearly every sense. And they're almost part of the team full time in the sense that they just help and they contribute proactively. That's my one thing I'd ask for any advisor is lean in and don't wait for us to come and ask you for help. They have a conversation for us and tell us you've had it and here's an opportunity or here's a thought process and here's work. That'd be it.
Love it. And then one of my favorite questions that is the closing question.
It's a bit wrong.
If you could change one thing in fintech to make fintech better and have positive impact to customers, employees, and investors, what could it be?
It would be, let's talk, I think, can we have two?
Let's start with one. And then we can expand on two. We have time.
The biggest thing we can do, I think, is, like I said earlier, let people fail and genuinely help them. Mm. It's not a thing. It's not a stigma. It's not an underlying stigmatism around you. You failed and that's a bad thing. You never quite got this wrong or the model's hard or blah, blah, blah. Just to make it genuine that when people do, it's amazing that you actually did something. Let's use that and encourage that. And I do think there's a difference between what is posted on LinkedIn and what I hear in different conversations. Yeah. I don't think it's the same. I think if we can align those things, actually, we are very pro it. And it's a really good thing to have done it and tried it. I think that'll accelerate the whole industry because people will be more willing to have goes and try stuff out, side hustle goes. And that's a good opportunity. That'd be my one. I'll stick to one.
Now I want to hear the number two.
The other one, which is just the fintech with purpose question. Can we just talk about non-fintech things with fintech people in the room? Because I think that's a really interesting
opportunity. I love that. Can you expand?
or we talk about mental health, or we talk about other things that are going on societally, loads of fintech people in the room, but talk about something entirely different. Because when we think about that, the kind of where Echo came from is we talk about the other thing, and then there are enough fintech nerds in the room and we can figure out ways we can help solve that problem. But don't talk about fintech and that problem. Just talk about that problem. Come on. Let's just spend time talking about that. And new entrepreneurs will come up and come up with new ideas, or people who own products in different areas that there are. I'm a product owner for that. I can think about this in a new way. But just talk about the problems away from fintech.
I like that. Maybe we'll be a new segment in the podcast.
Yeah, we'll talk about something entirely different. And then someone will have an idea and go, I think I can solve it in a totally different way. Let's do that.
Exactly. It's a total different problem statement.
Yeah.
Health, mental health and health, for
yeah,
example.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Someone was going to figure out a good way that we can help fintech and help them.
Love it. Ollie, it's been an absolute pleasure reconnecting and having you in the show. Thank you so much. Nice.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. See you, everyone. See you next week. Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening. Your time and energy means a lot. If you want to support the show, remember to give it a follow and DM me to get in touch. I promise I do respond.